It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. From sophisticated imaging to targeted treatments, we examine nuclear medicine advancements and what it means for certain cancers. Recently published data here from the World Nuclear Association, over 20 million procedures using radiopharmaceuticals and imaging instruments are carried out each year in our country. Call in with questions about nuclear medicine, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Steve Cho is a professor and section chief of the Nuclear Medicine Section of the Department of Radiology at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Cho, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, your reaction to the National Cancer Institute, you know, with this explosion of research and clinical trials involving nuclear pharmaceuticals, why the growing interest?
Yeah, you know, this radiopharmaceutical therapies have been around for a while, you know, back even into the going back to 1930s, with iodine-131 for treating thyroid cancer. However, there's been a recent explosion in the advances in this area for neuroendocrine tumor and recently for prostate cancer, which has been very effective for treatment and causing a lot of excitement because not only can it be effective in those areas, but it promises to really make advances in other tumors as well.
And, you know, just at the start here, can you explain how does nuclear medicine differ from radiation oncology?
Yeah, radiation oncology, or what radiation oncologists typically do is provide external beam radiation. So they provide high energy radiation from outside the body, which they can contour and shield normal organs and target and intensify to tumor cells for treatment. They also do some treatments, brachytherapy, but you know, an area that's been developed is radiopharmaceutical therapy or theragnostics, which is really kind of a new term that really incorporates the term diagnosis and therapy in one term, theragnostics. And so nuclear medicine combines those areas to inject a radiopharmaceutical into your body, where it then accumulates and targets in the tumor cells and provides radiation therapy specifically at the tumor cells in this different way. Radiation oncologists can deliver this as well, and nuclear medicine physicians as well.
We saw the headline how the University of British Columbia received more than $23 million in funding to develop new radiopharmaceutical therapies. And in the announcement, it was really bold. Nuclear medicine can cure cancer, and Canadian researchers are stepping up the fight. What is your response to an announcement like that?
You know, I think that announcement really underlies the excitement in the field and really a lot of growing development, as I mentioned earlier, for treating cancer and effectively treating cancer. You know, in the cancer clinical and research field, we're very cautious about using the term cure because many times these are very difficult to control us. But I do like to say that, I think this is one step in our effort to cure cancer. I don't think we're there yet, but I do think we're these new theragnostics or radiopharmaceutical therapies is one step in getting there and really promises to provide cures in the future. Currently, these therapies really provide what we call durable remission or control the cancer and really provide prolonged survival and quality of life for our patients.
Are the types of cancers that nuclear medicine is most involved with, have those changed over the decades?
Yes. One area that really has, one treatment that really has, was a landmark that really showed the proof of concept for these therapies is a treatment called lutetium dotatate. That's kind of a mouthful, but the trade name is called Lutathera for neuroendocrine tumors. What's really interesting is with neuroendocrine tumors, it's really what we call an orphan disease. There are only a small number of patients, but they have a really strong patient advocacy group, and they really help to bring, in conjunction with the doctors and patients, these treatments, the lutetium dotatate radiopharmaceutical therapies, to patients in the United States about 5 years ago. Even though it's a small cancer disease group, it was really, really demonstrated to the field that this is a very effective, viable way of treating cancer. More recently, you know, they're for prostate cancer, which is a much larger problem in the United States, affecting many men. It's the second leading cause of cancer in men in the United States, and second leading cause of death in men in the United States. You know, there's a recent treatment called lutetium PSMA or Pluvicto, which was approved last year, and that really has demonstrated effectiveness for treatment and control for these patients, and generating a lot of excitement from patients.
We're looking into nuclear medicine with Dr. Steve Cho, professor and section chief of the nuclear medicine section of the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, also director of the radiopharmaceutical production facility. Call in with your questions about nuclear medicine. What comes up for you? 800-642-1234. Dr. Cho, let's talk about these scans. Your specialty is nuclear imaging, evaluating how organs function, whereas other imaging methods assess how an organ looks. Can you tell us about PET image scans?
Yes. So PET scans, and by PET scans, there are imaging that we do for our veterinary animals and pets. But these are PET scans. It's symbol PET, meaning positron emission tomography, and it's kind of a very fancy term for really a very interesting imaging method, which is positrons, which are antimatter to electrons, actually are radioactivity that can be produced in cyclotrons. And actually there's a cyclotron in the basement of our Wisconsin Imaging Institute for Medical Research, Wimmer facility on the UW campus, and several around the state and around the country. You make these short-lived radioisotopes, which then are tagged to a target radiopharmaceutical. Then when you inject that in the body, it basically targets to a tumor, and then the positron emission actually provides some emissions, which can then very accurately image where the tumor is in your body. So it's effectively a way to image from within the radioactivity that accumulates in the tumor cells, and it's an effective way to both diagnose and stage cancer tumors.
What did PET scans replace? What do they do better than other imaging or imaging of the past?
Yeah, you know, I think it's, you know, I think there are many different imaging modalities, and I like to think of them as being complementary. You know, really, it's not one imaging that replaces another. I think sometimes they have some tasks that may be better than others, but really we think of multimodality, that there are multiple uses. We, you know, I think PET scans are kind of in the realm of what we call molecular imaging, which is, you know, you can, you know, I think whenever you have a target that targets a tumor cell, basically, you know, you can imagine any type of different targets that image different types of tumor cells. And so, you know, I think your imagination is the limit in terms of how you can develop these agents. So, you know, one agent that we use that's the workhorse for cancer imaging is FDG, or fluorodeoxyglucose. It's essentially a glucose molecule that images the glucose metabolism of the tumor cells. And so molecular imaging really images the metabolism and the molecular pathways in the body. So instead of CT or MRI, which really CT is looking at the density of soft tissue and bone in your body in very, you know, complicated and fancy ways, and MRI is looking at different kind of water density and kind of proton density in your body. Really, molecular imaging is really looking at using radioactivity, molecular pathways and metabolism, and really exploiting that for tumor. We do use it, you know, beyond the scope of this discussion, for cardiac imaging, for neuroimaging, and multiple other uses as well.
Nuclear medicine physician Steve Cho explaining developments in using radiation to provide information about the functioning of specific organs or to treat diseases like cancers. Join the conversation at any point about this area of medicine. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how nuclear medicine is an area of healthcare poised for significant growth, with cancer and chronic diseases needing advanced diagnostics and targeted treatments. There's room to talk about this aspect of healthcare. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Steve Cho leads the nuclear medicine section at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Let's bring on a call. Marnie is here from North Freedom. Hi, Marnie.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a question. I don't know if it's the exact same kind of treatment or not, but my father was a few months ago diagnosed with bladder cancer, and the treatment that he was needing, they said that it's very hard to get, and so they only gave him half of the recommended dosage because they just couldn't get more of it. At least that's what the doctors told him. And then about 6 months, maybe less than 6 months, but anyway, the tumors came back. They're growing. He's actually having surgery for it today. But I just wondered, you know, had he had the full dosage, would that have changed things, or is that the same kind of treatment?
Marnie, thank you so much for sharing a personal story and thinking of you on this day of the surgery. Dr. Cho, what are your insights here?
Thank you for your question, Marnie, and I'm sorry to hear about your loved one there. You know, bladder cancer is not an area that currently, unfortunately, is not an area that we use radiopharmaceutical therapies or theranostics for. That may be a different type of tumor. They do use immunotherapy or other types of chemotherapy for that type of cancer. I think on a larger scope, you know, there have been shortages just that's been affecting many industries in production of some of these therapeutics, even, you know, non-radiopharmaceutical standard chemotherapy. So that may have been what's in your situation, and I hope the best for your family member there.
Along those lines, there is, you know, an element of nuclear medicine, radioisotopes that have been in a global shortage recently. How has that affected your work?
Yeah, you know, there have been shortages in radiopharmaceuticals, both for imaging and for treatment. So technetium is what we use, what we call the workhorse of our nuclear medicine imaging radiopharmaceuticals. And they're made in, you know, several reactors around the world. And when there's a limited supply of that, oftentimes when one of these reactors go offline, either for planned, you know, renovations and or if there are unplanned shortage, you know, production limitations. And so that's affected us. You know, I think some of the production that's happening with Northstar and Shine in southern Wisconsin promises to help alleviate some of that in the future. Usually, if that happens, we really work really hard with our nuclear medicine technologists and radiopharmacists to really keep track of the inventory of our radiopharmaceuticals and triage our patients. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you're really close to this, leading the UW-Madison radiopharmaceutical production facility. Can you take us into that in the effort to produce materials for nuclear medicine? How difficult is that?
Yeah, you know, some of these areas, it really depends on the type of radiopharmaceutical. So the technetium is really made currently. The current method is through nuclear reactors, and there are several of them isolated
throughout the world that are specific for this purpose. I think there's a new technology that's being developed, at Shine Pharmaceuticals and Northstar that promises to produce technetium in a different manner and provide a more sustainable way of doing that. And so that really is an exciting possibility going forward, for this imaging modality. For radiopharmaceuticals, for Pluvicto, which is the treatment for prostate cancer, there have been production shortages that have affecting patients in terms of getting timely treatment for Pluvicto for prostate cancer. That hopefully will be alleviated soon. There's a production facility in the United States that's been produced in New Jersey that's been approved and Indianapolis by the end of the calendar year. But until then, they've been shipped to the United States from Italy, if you believe it, for these treatments.
Wow. It is really certainly this global industry effort in order to make nuclear pharmaceuticals happen.
Yes, and many of these radiopharmaceuticals, have a short half-life. The half-life for technetium really is 6 hours, and for lutetium is 6 to 7 days. So these are not are different from standard, kind of therapies that you can sort of make and have sit on a shelf for longer. So these require really short timeline logistical kind of coordination to make sure they get to the patients in a timely manner.
We go inside the world of nuclear medicine, recent advancements in this growing sector of healthcare with Dr. Steve Cho leading us here and heads up the nuclear medicine section of the Department of Radiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your question. Dr. Cho, patients are exposed to radioactive materials when they undergo a procedure using nuclear medicine. Should patients be concerned about the long-term risks of nuclear treatment?
Yes, I think as with any other treatments, we really educate the patients in coordination with their radiation safety officers and every institution, their specific recommendations. I think, what I caution patients is that you need to be careful and follow specific precautions, but it's not something that you need to have inordinate concern about. I think if you're following these precautions, so many of these are typical COVID precautions that you would have. We really talk about time and distance. So the radioactivities have specific clearance from the body, what we call bioclearance. So, many of them are coming out in your urine or stool. And so we really recommend safe handling and safe, good hygiene in terms of hand washing. And then just time and distance from the patient, from other loved ones for a specific period of time, depending on the radiopharmaceuticals. And so, I think if you follow those precautions, your loved ones and the people around you in the public are very safe if you follow those guidelines.
What about machine learning and artificial intelligence as it spreads through so many industries, including healthcare? Where has machine learning been most helpful in nuclear medicine?
Yes, artificial intelligence is an area of great growth that's affecting all fields, including yours and mine. And there have been a lot of efforts in the Department of Radiology, in our School of Medicine, in collaboration with the engineering school as well. So, I think what we want to do in radiology is really be at the forefront. So we know this is coming. And once we interact and really try to have best use of artificial intelligence, then we can use it effectively. So, my colleagues are currently using this to help triage images. So when they're inundated with many, many images, and there was a recent research kind of symposium with our residents who actually have led some of these efforts to try to triage which scans are the ones that they should look at first, which may have some findings. We also have other methods where analyses that would take really 30 minutes to hours to do can be done in a matter of seconds and minutes, really allowing for us to provide some of these advanced quantitative imaging methods beyond what our eyes can see in these images, to provide prognosis and risk stratified patients for personalized therapies.
Do you see this as the way of the future?
It's definitely the way of the future. You know, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen for some of these. You know, I think one thing in our field that was predicted several years ago by a famous AI scientist was that we don't need to train radiologists anymore because AI will read all the images. And, you know, that prediction has proven false because we're busier than ever. And actually, we're facing physician burnout because of the high number of scans that are being read. And I think AI can really help us, potentially, if we use it effectively, to really effectively read this and meet some of the shortages.
Dr. Cho, thank you for joining us.
Great. Thank you for having me. And thank you for this opportunity.
Dr. Steve Cho, Professor and Section Chief of Nuclear Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.